there, and welcome to another edition of the Marlena Program. This is the program for the week of July 30th, 2007. I'm surely delighted that you're able to be with us, so come on in and sit down and put your feet up and get ready for another 2 hours of conversation, information, and time spent with friends right here at the Mainstream on ACB Radio. Well, good evening, everyone. Good morning, depending where on this great planet you are located. You are listening to the Marlena Program on ACB Radio Mainstream, and we will be introducing our guest in just a moment here. Let me get through a few housekeeping details. In the second hour, we will be visited at some point during that second hour by former President Chris Gray, former ACB President Chris Gray, who is going to make a surprise announcement to us all. And I'm looking forward to that. Now, if you're listening to this program at any time other than 6 to 7 in the West, 9 to 10 in the East, or on Sunday night in North America, or 1 to 2 Universal on a very early UTC Monday morning, it's a repeat, so put your feet up and enjoy. If, however, you're listening live, we will welcome your calls. We'll let you know when Gary the Board Guy has the lines open. Let me make welcome my guest tonight, Olegarios D. Cantos, the 7th, ESQ, which stands for Esquire, of course, who is the special counsel to the Assistant Attorney General, the Civil Rights Division, U.S. Department of Justice, or as he's become known to me through email and correspondence and chatting this week, Ole Cantos. Ole, welcome to the Marlena Program.
Thank you so much, Marlena. It is really a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're delighted that we're able to work this out and that you were able to be here, and I'm even delighted that I got your title right.
Oh, you're great.
Yes, well, as I told you in email, I move people to different states and give them new titles, and it's just the way it is. You know, I want to talk about your job and so forth, but I want to start at the beginning. And have you talked to us a bit about where you grew up? Have you been blind from birth, etc.? And then we'll kind of move along through your life to how you got where you are and what that's like.
Sure, Marlena. I actually became blind as the result of medical malpractice. I was born 2 months premature, and because of being placed in the incubator and the oxygen levels being higher than what they themselves prescribed me to have, the nerves in both my eyes were essentially destroyed.
Ah.
And so when I was growing up, it was really, really difficult. But the biggest source of the difficulty actually was how I was treated by other kids. Kids would come up to me and they'd wave their hands in front of my face and say, "How many fingers am I holding up?" And they'd run away, or they would just carefully put their feet right in front of where I was walking, and then they would trip me, and then they'd say, "Ha, you didn't see that." And then I'd feel like crying at times, and then on top of everything else, they'd pressure me, and they'd say, "What are you going to do, Ole? Are you going to be a big baby and tell on us? Go ahead, you baby, go ahead, tell." So it was like that growing up, and it was very, very difficult. And so at that time, I actually thought that the problem was the blindness, when actually in reality, what I've since learned and come to understand in my life is that it's not the blindness, it's just what people thought of it. That was really the biggest source of the difficulty.
Sure, sure. I, too, am blind due to, well, today's word is ROP, but I knew it as RLF, so.
Oh, that's what I have. Yeah,
yeah. And I can well relate to that because I remember being a child and having kids come up to me and go, blindy, blindy, bet you can't find me. And then they'd get real quiet and they would steal my dolls out of my doll carriage and run away with my things. And so that's a hard thing to live through. But I don't know, my perspective on all of that is that I actually look at that now as a gift because it gave me some of the chutzpah that I think I have today.
Well, we all should have some level of chutzpah, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So did you attend school for the blind, public school, or what was your schooling like?
Well, believe it or not, my first experience with an educational institution was starting at the age of 2. I went to the Blind Children's Center in Los Angeles, California, and I was there from ages 2 through 5. And that's where I learned some basic skills, and that's where my parents were sent from some ophthalmologists that they knew who had said, hey, you need to send your son to the Blind Children's Center because they really work on helping to show kids how to integrate, and so that's a good place to start. So that's how I started.
And at what age did you start learning to read Braille?
I learned Braille at the ripe old age of 22.
Really?
Uh-huh. Now the plot thickens.
Now,
oh my gosh, you're wondering.
Plottens, yes. Okay, let's back up. I thought you were going to tell me that you started to learn Braille at age 3 or something like that.
I wish. Believe me, I wish.
Why? Why age 22?
Well, growing up, because I have some residual vision, I have some light perception, and if looking at print really, really close for just a couple seconds, I can see it sort of. And so I used what was called a CCTV. A lot
right.
of your listeners will know what that is.
Sure.
And so I used that growing up. But what happened is I'd have headaches, and it was really, really rough. But basically, I went through school with tapes, large print, and readers, and I found it to be really difficult, which is one of the reasons why I'm a Braille literacy advocate now, where technology is actually an important part of life, but Braille is still critically important for real independence.
Yes, absolutely. And I believe that AFB has a statistic, and I surely wish I could find it. And if you know it and know where it is, I'd love to actually have it because I cite it loosely all the time. But there is a statistic that says that of the blind population who are Braille literate, something like 90% are employed.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. That's right.
But where
right.
do we get that from?
That's at www.afb.org.
Yeah, and I must try to seek that out because I'm a great Braille fan as well, and I think that is such a cogent argument for the use of Braille and to encourage newly blinded folks to at least give it a shot.
Exactly, and actually what people think when it comes to Braille is that it's only for those who are totally blind, but it's not. Matter of fact, I know a guy who is, I think, in his late 20s now, and his name is Josh, and he learned Braille as a kid, and so he now reads 300-plus words a minute,
yeah.
if not more, and yet when he puts the book down, he has these favorite video games that he likes to play. So the way he explains it, Braille is the most efficient thing, but that doesn't mean that he shouldn't use his residual vision. It's
That's
basically
right.
the measuring stick is efficiency.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, and we're sort of getting off the topic of you a little bit, but just something you may not have known is Ray Bradbury, the great science fiction writer, learned Braille. And he learned it because he liked reading in the dark.
I didn't know that.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, that's a great. Now, can you give me where I can get information on that?
I will search it out. I will. Gary the Borg guy, who is the great Ray Bradbury expert, is the one who told me, and he's listening. So there's your homework, Gary the Borg guy. All right, let's get back to Ole the guest here, and let's talk about your growing up.
Sure, Marlena, the host.
Oh, all right, only the guest. What did you attend public school? Did you go to special school? What was that about?
I did. I attended public school from grades 1 through 8. And along the way, I had phenomenal itinerant teachers, and I was mainstreamed because the Education of All Handicapped Children Act was signed into law in 1975, and I entered first grade in 1976. So it was nice of them to hurry and get the law passed before I came to school.
Hey.
So I was actually at the very, very, very beginning of implementation of the brand new law, which has since been renamed in 1990 as the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And so growing up, I had a mix of itinerant instruction along with mainstreaming and it was really an intense experience. And then when I was in high school, I went to parochial school. So I actually have a mix of various educational settings growing up.
Wow, from high school, public school, into parochial school. That sometimes can be quite a switch. Did you find, in terms of your blindness, which one was better for you, the public school or the parochial school, or did it really matter?
At the time, I really didn't notice any real difference in that regard. The public school system that I was part of through eighth grade, they actually discouraged me from going to parochial school, and they said, if you send him to private school, Mrs. Cantos, then what's going to happen is you're going to end up losing services, and you don't want to do that. You need to keep him here. And my mom said, no, I want him to go to private school, and so she did it anyway. And then still, even though I went to parochial school, I still got itinerant instruction.
Sure.
And my itinerant teacher, who's since retired, I'm still in touch with periodically. I still get Christmas cards from Mrs. Newman every year.
Oh, that's neat. That's neat. All right, so you graduated from high school. Now, as you were in high school, did you know that you wanted to become an attorney and then that you wanted to end up in Washington? What did you really want to do when you were a kid?
Well, the influence in this regard actually runs in the family with regard to going into this type of field, or actually not really this type of field specifically, but going to politics, because I actually my grandfather was a congressman in the Philippines, and when I was 10 years old and I traveled to the Philippines for the first time, which is where my parents are both from, I ended up meeting various political leaders that were there, and I remember very, very specifically how there was such abject poverty in different places. And I remember how bumpy the roads were and the interesting and awful smells that were in the air because of the bad health conditions that were existing. And then suddenly, at one moment, the road was smooth, and then apparently there was really nice green grass, and there was this gated community, and it turned out that we went into a country club. And so I remember sitting around the table with these various elected officials who were high in government at that time in that province, which is the province of Batangas, if anyone out there is Filipino. And I remember actually asking them just basic political questions, saying, oh, gosh, so you guys ran for election, so people voted for you? And they said, yeah, they voted for us. And I said, so they voted for you because you wanted to help them and so you could help people, right? And they said, yeah, that's right, Oli. And I said, so I'm kind of confused. If they voted for you to help them, then how come you guys are in here and all of them are out there?
To which they said.
To which it got quiet, and I kind of got in trouble for asking those kind of questions. But it actually was my first major lesson in being a civil rights activist and pushing for equality of opportunity for folks. And at that time still, I was still sort of learning my own identity, and I actually learned over time that if I became an attorney, I could find a way to make a difference. And I also had the goal of making a lot of money. So I thought, hey, I want to make a difference and make a lot of money. And so that was my goal from roughly around that time through the time I actually was in high school and was involved in high school debate and various competitions of different sorts, and also wrote for the school newspaper, became junior class president, student body president, etc.
Did anyone ever try to discourage you and say, oh, come on, Ole, you know, you're blind, you're visually impaired, you know, let's get real, you can't do that?
Marlena, I cannot even begin to tell you how appreciative I am to you for asking that question, because all my life, there were people who were well-meaning who said, come on, Ole, you look, we love you, we care about you, we want what's best for you, we want you to be realistic. They said, be realistic. Of course you should have a job, of course, but remember, you want to be a lawyer, but you have to remember you can't see. And because you can't see, you have to understand that because you're limited in seeing, that means you have to understand some limitations you might happen to have. Let's say blind people can't drive trucks. Well, so blind people can't do the lawyer thing either necessarily. So that doesn't mean you're a bad person. It's just that you have to be realistic with what your goals are. Go into something else, like maybe journalism, or maybe do something else that isn't so stressful. And so against all of that talk by various folks, my immediate family resisted all of that. And that whole way of thinking was actually perfectly in keeping with the way the culture was back in the Philippines. I was born in the States, in California, but the culture that we were a part of basically asserted that folks with disabilities were somehow defective and were the source of pity and shame, and the family must have done something, etc., to cause that. And so with that backdrop, my family resisted. My parents said, no, we are going to insist that he be subject to the same level of expectations, and we expect him to do well. And that's actually what happened, Marlena. My mom especially, my whole immediate family, but especially my mom, she really insisted that I get good grades, including A's on spelling tests and so forth, and if I didn't, I'd get in trouble.
You know, it really is true. There's quite a correlation when I interview folks and talk and try to bring out what you and I have just talked about, sort of the level of encouragement and discouragement. And it's almost across the board 100% true that the folks who have been able to step out are the folks who had really good immediate family support, and usually most of that, not all of it, but most of that comes from the mom. And I think that's really significant and a very good reason why advocates need to be reaching out to parents of blind children and really
exactly
helping them see the reality of blindness.
Exactly. It's really critical to use a clinical, not really necessarily a clinical term, but to intervene at an early stage or early intervention to allow parents to learn what are the resources that are out there that are available to them. And some cross-disability resources, let's say the PACER Center, the Parent Advocacy Center for Educational Rights, www.pacer.org, has a lot of resources that are of importance to parents as they advocate for the rights of their kids. It has information there about how parents can learn about the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and how it applies to their kids and how do they advocate and what is due process, etc. And another website is www.idea.ed.gov, which actually also talks very specifically about how No Child Left Behind intersects with IDEA and what are the appropriate and applicable regulations that have been finalized as a result of working to align the two laws.
All right, let's move on to, you have become an attorney, you've graduated college, you've graduated law school, and I used to work for the dean of Boston College Law School way back 105 years ago, and I know that graduating law school is no simple task. It's a lot of late nights, a lot of reading, an awful lot of really, there are many kids who don't make it out of that first year because it's so stressful, so kudos to you for doing that. What did you do when you got out of law school and you finally got it? You're finally a lawyer. Now what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, what happened is after I passed the bar, I found out the results on a Friday. They were made public on a Sunday, and then Monday morning, and I think 9:36 in the morning, I received an email from a law firm in Los Angeles saying, "Hi, Ole, we saw the bar results. Congratulations." you want to work for us? So that
wow.
was the beginning of how it all started. But it, the reason why that even happened was because I took time while waiting for the bar results to serve in an internship capacity. I was not paid one thin dime, but I worked my tail off. I worked as if I was paid $1 million. And I didn't do it necessarily for the purpose of working there specifically, because I didn't know exactly what I was going to do when I passed. But I just did it simply because I liked to have a strong work ethic, because that's what I was taught. And so apparently it paid dividends.
Now, there are some people who may be critical of that, Ole. There are some people who may say, wait a minute, are you advocating that blind people should volunteer on a work site to show that they can do this kind of work?
Well, it's important for anybody, those of us who are blind, visually impaired, as well as those who aren't, who are looking for job opportunities, to find volunteer opportunities that are out there. And there's a thing called service learning that enables people with and without disabilities to get involved in the community, to be of service, and to gain some incredible and important job experience, so that way when they put out their resume, they'll be able to have new skills that they can put down. That's why they can get involved with the Corporation for National and Community Service, www.cncs.gov, and look there to find information about service learning and other opportunities that could really be of help.
All right. So when did you first become involved in disability rights?
I first became involved in 1988, when I won a scholarship from the California Council of the Blind, and Bob Acosta was president at the time, and that was when I had just started at Loyola Marymount University, and then it was at that time that I first met Mitch Pomeranz, who's now current ACB president. And Mitch, if you're listening, congratulations, buddy. And I also met Chris Gray and Derwood McDaniel and some other folks at that time, because I remember sitting in on the resolutions committee meetings, because in California, the conventions of the California Council of the Blind were held, if I recall correctly, in the fall and in the spring.
Right.
So I attended those, and I got to know various folks that way.
All right. And then you moved on after your L.A. job. Is that when you went to, you tell me what you did after that.
Well, after my job in Los Angeles, then I ended up going to Washington, or coming here to Washington, D.C. to work as part of the American Association of People with Disabilities. I was actually recruited to come out here by Andy Imperato, president
sure.
and CEO of the organization, which actually now boasts membership in excess of 130,000. And at the time when I became general counsel and director of programs, I think it only had 65,000 members. And so I was brought here to Washington to actually get involved with building Disability Mentoring Day, which is an employment and internship opportunity. Well, it's actually an opportunity that creates job shadowing and hands-on career exploration that leads to, ideally, to job offers to folks in the field. And when I took it over, it was just in 32 states. And then from there, it expanded significantly. Within about 2.5 years, I grew it to being in just 32 states and D.C. to being in those places, plus Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and 19 foreign countries on 5 continents. And so it was just a really, really incredible, incredible experience getting to build. And then the mentoring effort, actually, it went from just 1,600 participants to more than 10,000. So I was pretty happy.
Very interesting. And now you are, I'm going to look at it again so I get it right, special counsel to the Assistant Attorney General, the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice. How did you get from working with AAPD to doing this?
Well, I ended up seeing an opening in the Justice Department to serve here in the Civil Rights Division. And so when I applied and I actually ended up being commissioned as Special Assistant to the Assistant Attorney General, and I worked directly with the Assistant Attorney General, who at the time was R. Alexander Acosta. And my role was to increase synergy between the Justice Department and the disability community in all its sectors to ensure that we actually come together to enhance civil rights enforcement, because there are actually a number of different tactics for civil rights enforcement. One thing is to enhance outreach and education, to give people basic awareness of what their rights are and responsibilities and how to enforce them. And then there's also mediation and litigation. And so the Justice Department did all of those things and does all of those things, and that's how I ended up really stepping up some efforts. And because I really work to keep the network that I've built over the years, the network just continually expands. So I was in a perfect position to reach out to various leaders in the disability community to find ways to collaborate in real substantive ways on Title II and Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which covers respectively state and local government and places of public accommodation, as well as to work on other areas in conjunction with other federal agencies with their own enforcement efforts on transportation and telecommunications and so forth. So it's been really an amazing, amazing time. And then 20 months after I had the job as special assistant, I was in New Mexico at the time on an investigation, and then I got a call, and it was actually from the White House, and the White House, they said, "Mr. Cantos, this is the White House calling. We're wondering if you can come in to see us as quickly as possible," and I thought it was a joke. Gosh, it was incredible. And long story short, I ended up getting the job within about 2 weeks, and then I was associate director for domestic policy, working at the White House for two consecutive terms of service. And then after that, I came back to the Justice Department to do what I'm doing now.
Is what you're doing now a presidential appointment, or is it I don't know what the opposite of a presidential appointment is, so forgive me for not knowing the term.
Oh, that's okay. I actually continue to hold a political post. My position as special assistant before and now special counsel, these are both appointments by the Attorney General.
The first
Attorney General appointment came from Attorney General. Oh, my gosh, now it's just skipping me. For those listening, I'm so sorry for having blanking out. John Ashcroft,
so, right.
And then after that, then Alberto Gonzalez commissioned me for the current position that I have.
Okay. All right. We are going to open the lines. The telephone number is 866-666-7926. I'm going to ask Ole one more question, and then we will open the lines to you. ACB is very concerned and working very hard to change literally the face of United States currency and to create accessible currency that's tactile in some way or another. What is your position on the accessible currency issue?
Because of policy, I actually cannot speak on behalf of the government regarding this, because that is actually under the lead of the United States Department of the Treasury, and as such, I'm prohibited from commenting officially on that, because that's something that you'll have to ask the Justice Department. That's unfortunately all I can say about that, because of our internal government rules.
Okay, well, that's, we respect that, and
but one thing I can tell you is that the National Council on Disability, I think, is addressing this, if I remember correctly, at www.ncd.gov. That's the independent federal agency making recommendations to Congress and the President for national disability policy changes. So I'm not sure if NCD, I just don't recall, if NCD has made any specific changes yet, but that might be something you might want to check on. And from what I recall, John R. Vaughn, who is chairperson of NCD, actually spoke at your convention a couple weeks ago. So
right.
You might be able to check with him.
Right.
And I'll give you his email address. It's chairperson@ncd.gov.
You are just a talking encyclopedia.
You're funny.
We have a call. Let's bring them on in. Hi there. You're with Marlena and Ole Cantos. Who's this?
Joe Hart.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. I am fine, thank you. Mr. Cantos, How are you tonight?
Doing great, Joe.
We have several issues in enforcement of Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act going on here in Michigan, and including Project Civic Access settlements, which are neither being monitored nor enforced. A fundamental issue that we have is that all state and local entities are required to remit information in accessible formats. They don't do so, sir. I've documented in several complaints to the Department of Justice that they do not do so.
Which and city, Joe?
Pardon?
Which city?
The city of Burton, which, by the way, is right next door to my city, and of which, by the way, the ADA coordinator has been convicted of bribery and extortion by the U.S. Attorney's Office, something that I've informed Mr. Wodech of and several others. But the bottom line is, and this goes to generally enforcement of effective communications by the Department of Justice overall, and you've seen some of my cases and some of my complaints, sir. You know, we do not get accessible formatted information. And I've sent you that related to the city of Flint. I've sent you that related to working with a polling place worker.
Okay, hang on. Ollie's trying to respond to you, Joe. Go ahead, Ollie.
I'm sorry, Joe. You sent it to me?
Yes.
To me specifically?
Yes.
I haven't seen anything from you, actually.
Yes, and you actually responded to my inquiry for accessible information in the city of Flint, Michigan, to be a polling place worker. But the real issue here is we talked about Braille. We talked about learning these, you know, alternate format techniques. And what we need to have is enforcement on our state and local entities on giving us this information.
Okay, let's let Ollie respond to that. And thanks a lot, Joe.
Joe, that really makes a lot of sense. With regard to the instances where agreements that cities entered into through our Project Civic Access program aren't being enforced, that's something that I really do appreciate you telling me, so that way if you were to let me know what those specifics are, then what I can do is I can dispatch the section to look into it. And if you have sent it to me, I haven't gotten it. I remember vaguely the other issue with regard to voting and you're being a poll worker, but if there's anything else, I haven't seen it. So if you actually you get in touch with me, then I will be happy to take care of looking into it further. And for those of you who don't know, Project Civic Access is one of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division's premier programs with regard to disability rights enforcement. Under Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act, we have the authority unilaterally to go in to investigate cities and towns for compliance with Title II, as well as with compliance with Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. And through those agreements, we actually look at different policies and programs and practices that need to be modified and changed in various areas of physical accessibility that need to be taken care of. And what we then do as a result of our very detailed inspection is we have a Project Civic Access agreement that we put into place that actually cities would actually sign, in which they agree to doing these different things. So if you send me information about where that's lacking, where we have entered into agreement with a particular city or town and they're not following through, then send me that. And that actually goes true for everybody listening. If you go to www.ada.gov and you look up the information about Project Civic Access, all of our Project Civic Access agreements are online, so you're welcome to read through them at your leisure, and then from there to let us know if there are some difficulties that may not have been brought to our attention previously.
And if people want to communicate with you, it's Ollie, O-L-L-I-E, .Cantos, C-A-N-T-O-S, @ USDOJ, for United States Department of Justice, .gov.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Got that right. We have another caller. Let's bring him on in. Hi, you're with Oli and Marlena. Who's this?
Am I on the air?
You are.
Thank you, Marlena. This is Bob Bartlett in Houston, and I wanted to offer greetings to you. Congratulations on being the new ACB secretary.
Why, thank you.
Hi to my friend.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Cantos.
Hi, Bob, and congratulations, Marlena. I didn't know that.
Thank you. Yes. Hi, Bob. There you go. Oli's right there listening.
Good deal. Oli, how are you tonight?
Doing great, Bob. It's good to talk to you.
Well, it's always a pleasure. I was going to ask you, Oli, probably 4 years ago now, I participated in a meeting where the Department of Justice came to various cities, had a little dog and pony show. In fact, this gave me the opportunity to meet Alex Acosta at a presentation called Business Connection, I believe it was called.
ADA Business Connection, right?
Yeah, and trying to acquaint businesses within the community of the advantages of hiring people with disabilities and things like that. Do you anticipate this program continuing, or is it continuing? Is it an ongoing project or what?
I appreciate the question, Bob. As a matter of fact, it is continuing, and we've already had at least 15 of them across the country, and we're going to continue to have more because we're finding that cities are leaders of disability rights organizations and of nonprofit organizations and of different local municipalities are actually finding the dialogue to be very, very effective because we come in, we facilitate the dialogue, illustrate some best practices, and then after folks start talking, at the end of the whole thing, we step away and we leave it to the local folks to continue the dialogue that we began so that way it's not big, bad government sort of stepping in to try to interfere with local affairs unnecessarily, but instead it's fostering more of a dialogue so that way disability rights leaders along with city leaders and other folks can actually put their heads together on coming up with solutions for current accessibility problems.
All right, and I neglected to let folks know that when you pose your question, we will ask you to listen on your computer. We have a high listener count tonight, so I'm not hanging up on you. I'm just clearing the line for others to come in and ask questions, just like this person. Oh, my goodness, we have quite a high-pitched sound on this line. Hi, this is Marlena. You're with Marlena and Oli Cantos. Who's this? Hello? Well, I think we'll ditch that one. By golly. That almost sounded like a fax machine, Oli, didn't it?
Somewhat.
We're getting faxes here. 866-666-7926 is the telephone number, and I'm remiss in my own housekeeping duties. We're going to ask this caller to hold on just one moment, Oli to hold on just one moment, and we will be back. In just a moment, as soon as I get so involved in the conversation that I don't do what I'm supposed to do. Here we go. Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. You're listening to Marlena at the mainstream of acbradio.org and WTNDLP Macomb 106.3 FM. Right, you are listening to Marlena at the Mainstream, and my guest tonight is Oli Cantos, who is the special counsel. I'm not looking at it this time, Oli. Special counsel to the Assistant Attorney General, Office for Civil Rights, Department of Justice. Did I get it right?
Yes, ma'am.
It's a longy.
That
We have a call. Let's bring him in. Hi there. You're with Marlena and Oli Cantos. Who's this?
Well, hello, Marlena, and hello, Oli. This is Daryl Shandro.
Hello, Daryl.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good to hear from you, Daryl.
Yeah, the good old NFB days, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great. Oh, my gosh. It's been a long time.
I feel like I should start singing, Should Old Acquaintance Be Forgot? Daryl's one of my favorite people. He works very, very hard for accessibility. And I'll shut up, Daryl, because I know you have a question.
Well, can I mention the other thing first?
Yeah, of course. You sure can. You do whatever you want.
Okay. Well, first of all, I would like to ask everyone listening, I'm not sure if you can do this, Ollie. If you are able and you agree, then you're certainly welcome to. But we have an online petition that is asking Yahoo to make their CAPTCHA, or visual verification, accessible to blind and visually impaired people. And at this time, we're asking for an audio CAPTCHA because that's the current state of the art. And there's a lot of technology out there to do this now, so they're really, that can be considered a, quote, reasonable, quote, accommodation. So anyway, we're asking Yahoo to do that. The website for the petition is blindwebaccess.com. Blindwebaccess.com. We have posted an announcement on the ACB Radio blog and the acbradio.org website as well.
All right, blindwebaccess.com.
That is correct. It's an online petition. You can view all the signatures on there. And one of the things that I love about these efforts is you get to see the testimonial evidence. A lot of people will put comments
sure.
along with their signatures.
Sure, sure. All right. And I have taken care of the other matter that we emailed about. So let me let you get back with Ollie and get to your question.
Okay. Thanks, Marlena. And, yes, Ollie, so... speaking of this, kind of leads into my question of you. So, speaking of electronic accessibility, whether it's accessibility to websites, CAPTCHA included, and AJAX and Web 2.0 technologies, or whether it's accessibility to employment-related applications, I almost lost my day job last year over some technology accessibility issues, and I had to be rather creative to ensure that I retain that. So what is the current position of the Department of Justice, and what can be done with respect to the ADA and, 504, 508 of the Rehab Act and these other laws and regulations we have concerning accessibility in areas that are electronic or virtual rather than physical?
Your question, actually, Daryl, is very timely because at present, the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department here is preparing to release a Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, or NPRM, which actually revises accessibility-related regulations, including discussion and regulation of electronic access. And that's really important. And so once we end up releasing this, it'll be subject to public comment and so forth. But with regard to accessibility, it's really critically important. It's actually happening at a cross-agency level. With regard to Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, which was codified under what was the Assistive Technology Act from 1998, information technology has to be accessible to people with disabilities, for especially among those who receive federal government funds. And so governments are entities that do business with the federal government actually have to make their information and electronic technology accessible. And so what we've done at a cross-agency level is under the General Services Administration, which is basically the arm of the government that works on a lot of these issues, they have been coordinating cross-agency efforts to implement Section 508. Each agency has a Section 508 coordinating committee, which puts together a transition plan and then moves forward on making their information accessible to comply with 508. And also the Justice Department, in addition to our own efforts, is actually working on continuing to provide technical assistance on 508. And a website to go to, in addition to www.ada.gov, is www.section508.gov. And the United States Access Board has also addressed Section 508 related issues with regard to access to information and electronic technology. And you can go to www.access-board.gov. And that particular website, including 508.gov, has critical information that is of importance to programmers, so that way they can learn the very specific steps that they need to take to comply with Section 508. And it's really important to have that information handy, because that will help them to know what they need to do.
You know, it's a very interesting issue, this whole discussion of access, of course, which people like Daryl, myself, and I mean anyone who's active in this movement is obviously working toward. And yet I read an article, which I will be happy to send you so that perhaps you can become as flustered as I when I read it. But I read an article about Steve Jobs, you know, Mr. Apple, and he hates buttons, and he does not want buttons on anything. He wants nothing but touchscreen. And so how do you, you know, and this isn't a question, this is a rhetorical question, I mean, how do you crack that kind of an attitude as you're working on access? It's a toughie.
Well, it's an important concern to address, and that's where organizations like the American Council of the Blind and my organization, the National Federation of the Blind, really can work collaboratively on pushing hard with these companies to push for accessibility.
Sure.
Because access is really critical, and if necessary, we need to take it to the courts.
Sure. All right, we have another caller. Let's bring him in, if I can push the right button. Hi there, you're with Marlena and Ole Cantos. Who's this?
Marlena, it's Mitch Pomerantz.
Hello, Mitch Pomerantz. How are you?
I'm good, except I was the fella at the other end of the line with a high-pitched tone and got disconnected.
Oh, so. My gosh, you had quite a tone with you.
Yeah, I certainly did. Hello, Ole.
Hi, Mitch. Tell Donna I said hi.
Well, Donna says hi to you.
Oh, great, great.
And
congratulations.
Well, thank you. And I understand that you're not in a position to discuss policy positions, issues per se, but you know, this is an issue of interest to ACB, but it's also an issue of interest to me personally, because I'm still working in the ADA field. Public rights of way section of the ADAG has been out there for a while. And it's my understanding that the Department of Justice position basically is that they're not moving forward very quickly on vetting the new ADAG, actually the entire ADAG. And I'm real concerned about that. You know, it's real difficult when there are necessary upgrades. And for whatever reason, and I've not gotten a satisfactory answer to DOJ's hesitance or reluctance to move on it, I've heard that they might actually go back to square one with another NPRM. I'm wondering if you can shed a little light on what the delay is all about.
Sure. Well, from what I recall, public rights of way is actually one of the issues addressed in the NPRM. And actually, I can tell you from firsthand knowledge that it's already at the Office of Management and Budget. So process-wise, we've already done everything that we could here, and now we just have to await OMB approval. Then once we're approved to release it, then we're going to release it for public comment. Assistant Attorney General Juan Kim has literally issued orders to the division saying, we need to get this done and we need to get it out. We can't be waiting anymore on this, and there's already been a significant enough of a delay. And so because of that in particular, that's why this has actually been a top priority. I've actually been a participant in different meetings pushing through with the NPRM language drafting process, as well as running it through internal folks here at DOJ. And so now we just have to wait for our marching orders, and once it's out, then that's when folks will be able to have an opportunity to comment on this and other issues.
Because what obviously concerns a lot of us is if this is not out and approved by the end of 2008,
exactly.
There'll be a brand new administration.
Yep.
It'll take another year for this
exactly.
to get going.
Exactly. That's our concern too. That's the Assistant Attorney General's direct concern. He actually shares that as well, which is why we're pushing so hard on this. I mean, people have been here on weekends, all sorts of pushing all sorts of hours. People in the disability rights section under this office that I'm in have worked very, very hard on getting this stuff done. And so we actually share that concern very, very directly, and I'm on record here to tell you that it's a priority of ours to get this darn thing out, because it really needs to be out as quickly as possible. And matter of fact, with regard to the public rights of way issue, I just spoke about this, or Marilyn Golden just spoke with me about this on Saturday, just yesterday, so I've actually told her to get in touch with me about any specifics on that too. For those of you who are listening, Marilyn Golden is with the Disability Rights Education Defense Fund, or DREDA, based out of California, and they've done a lot of good work on accessibility issues.
Well, that's good. I let you off the hook, Ollie. I didn't even ask you about the ADA Restoration Act, but this was a. I figured I'd give you the lesser of the two tough questions to answer.
All right, and I gave you preferential treatment, Prez. So you're out of here now.
Take
Bye.
Care.
Bye bye. You can't quite, you know, knock the president off. You know what I mean? You know, you gotta, you know. 866-666-7926 is the telephone number. We have another call. My goodness. Well, let's bring him in. We'll push the right button. Hi there. You're with Marlena and Ole Cantos. Who's this?
Hi, Marlena. It's Mike Godino.
Hey, Mike Godino. How you doing?
All right. How are you? Hi, Ole. How you doing?
Hey, Mike, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. I'm just wondering on voting issues. You know, I'm here in New York State, and I've never had the opportunity to vote privately and independently.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that, you know, you as a blind fellow can do something up there with DOJ in, you know, helping me access my civil rights to vote privately and independently here in New York State.
Yeah, because your state is the only state that's still using the levers, right?
Well, New York State has seems as though New York State has painted themselves into a corner. They passed IRMA, which is the voter. It's the implementation of HAVA for New York State, and IRMA states that New York can no longer use lever machines after 2006. And the DOJ settlement said that in 2006 we'll have a 1-year fix that will allow us to have a machine that we can vote on for 2006. Now it's 2007, and we no longer use the certifier that was going to certify our machines, and we don't have machines, but we can't use the lever machines according to the law, and we can't go back to the judicial decision that was given to us as a result of the DOJ lawsuit, so we basically have paper this year.
Wow. All right. Well, let's let Ole share his thoughts on that. And thanks for calling, Mike.
Thank you, Marlena.
Hey, give Lori my love.
Will do. Thank
you. Okay. Bye bye. Yeah. What about that?
Well, Mike and others, the DOJ lawsuit actually really pushes hard for voter accessibility, and with whatever the delays are, to the extent that folks in New York are not complying with what they agreed to, that's something that we need to continue to address. And I'm trying to be as real specific as possible with this, because we actually filed suit against New York once it became abundantly clear that they were in violation of the Help America Vote Act. And so now the key is implementation. And so in terms of what the next steps may happen to be, they're actually, any updates about this case will be posted at www.usdoj.gov/CRT, and then under there you could go into the press release section or go into the voting section, which actually describes a lot of the work that's taking place as well. And to the extent that those of you who are in New York find that there are difficulties in the implementation or the actual enforcement of the agreement that we have, then make sure to let me know, And the email address has already been provided. Just let me know. And the title of it should be Voting Access, let's just say. And the way I operate with regard to email is that I always answer an email that comes in, even if it's a quick second or if it's a long dissertation, whatever way, I always answer it. So if you do not hear a response, it's because I haven't seen it. So to supplement that, if you want to call me, you can call 202-514-8191, and you can make a phone appointment there. And or you could also call my secretary directly, Robin Proudie, Proudie, at 202-514-5410, or email her at Robin, R-O-B-I-N, dot Proudie, at usdoj.gov. And just let me know if, let's say, an email that you've sent is here, and then if you call and let me know that, then I will look it up right away and give it top priority, because I get hundreds of email per day at times, and sometimes it's just not physically, humanly possible to get to all of them right at once. But then if somebody calls me and tells me something is there, then I look at it right away.
Okay, so to get the phone appointment, it's 202-514-8191. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And the secretary's number, I can repeat that later if you need.
Yeah.
But the other thing, too, is just so you know the process, when it's brought to my attention here, since I'm at the leadership level here at the Civil Rights Division, I will then send it off to the voting section for disposition. And so whenever you send something to me, or any of you send something to me, please make sure that you're very specific with regard to what the problems are, so that way we can see about having it addressed appropriately.
All right. We have another call. Hi there. You're with Marlena and Ole Cantos. Who's this?
Hi there. This is Tina Ackermanis from Colorado.
Hi, Tina.
Tina.
Yeah.
Hi.
I recognize your name.
Like,
oh, wow. My question involves, in terms of websites that are not covered by 508, such as, like, a lot of the retail websites and things like that, what can we do on a national level to encourage them to make their websites more accessible when they don't have the funding of the government in jeopardy if they don't?
All right.
Well, Tina, one thing that has actually been put forward as a theory that we've been using at the Justice Department here is we have been invoking the effective communication provisions of the ADA. So in other words, if a customer without a disability or visual disability, whichever one, if a customer without a disability can gain access to that same information, but yet we as people who are blind or visually impaired do not have access to the same level, then that would be we are saying that would be a violation of the effective communication provisions, because other people have access to that information very readily and we don't have access to that information. And so that's how we've addressed that, and how we continue to address that. And the other thing that's of critical importance too in working to enhance compliance by businesses is to actually have businesses talk to each other about the necessity for doing this. There's an organization called the United States Business Leadership Network, which is an organization only of for-profit businesses of all sizes that come together to push for better employment opportunities for people with disabilities and better access. And if you wanted to learn more about that, you can go to www.usbln.org. And the president of the United States Business Leadership Network, her name is Catherine McCary, KATHERINE.MC@suntrust.com, because she's an executive at SunTrust Banks, which is actually based here on the East Coast.
All right. We're going to be right back with Ole Cantos in just a minute. We do have a call on hold, and we'll ask that call to please remain on while we do a little housekeeping. Thank you. Well, we're trying to do a little housekeeping here. Maybe our housekeeping isn't going to work. Let's try it one more time here. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me tell you what the housekeeping is. Oh, here we go. Here we go.
You can help. Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page at www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. You're listening to Marlena at the mainstream of acbradio.org and WTNDLP Macomb 106.3 FM.
Right, we are back. I tell you, we have little gremlins in the studio tonight. Buttons aren't pushing and things aren't happening. And we are going to return to our guest here, who is going to stay with us for about another half hour. Oli, and we do have a call on hold here, but I want to let folks know that I am not calling you. You're not sitting in your living room with your feet up like most of us are. You're at your desk. You're at work on a Sunday.
Yes, ma'am.
My gosh, I couldn't believe it. I received an email from Oli this afternoon saying, I'm working. Can we change this to my office number? And I know the area in which you live, and I know the area in which you work, and they're not next door to each other. So you're a pretty committed guy, and that's a nice thing to know. All right.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, we don't want to make your head too big, but I just thought that people ought to know that you are working. You are at work on a Sunday, and it sounds like you were at work yesterday. But
right.
Let's bring in our next caller who's been very patiently waiting. Hello, and a special thanks for waiting. This is Marlena, and you're with Oli Cantos.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hello, my name is Ted Chittenden, and Oli, you don't know this, but both of us graduated from the same university. Loyola.
Oh, really, Ted? Really?
Yeah, really. I graduated in 1985, and looks like he graduated there 7 years later.
From the law school or from Loyola Marymount undergrad?
From the university itself, the undergraduate. No, I did not go to law school.
So you're the guy everybody told me about. Oh, it's so nice to meet you.
Oh, this is great.
It only took 15 years to figure out who you were.
Well, there were actually two blind people in the 1985 class. One was myself, who was interested in radio, and then there was another guy named Jeff Jenkins, who was actually quite a bit more social than I was. So could be either one of us that they were referring to. It'd be very interesting.
Wow, that's really exciting. Wow, it's nice to meet a fellow alum. Go Lions!
There we are. Go Lions! Just one quick question. Has the Bush administration taken any position on the ADA Restoration Act that has been introduced in the House yet?
No, it has not. I actually myself got in touch with the White House to ask them about that. There has been no position taken. And having worked there, I can tell you the process. Basically, what the White House often does is they wait to see how a bill has traction. And if it has enough traction that it's actually going to move ahead on, that's when the White House Domestic Policy Council, in this case, would end up stepping in to say whether or not they like the bill, et cetera. Or if the bill is up for markup, then that's when the White House could potentially step in also. There are different stages that this may be where the White House can actually get involved in making its recommendations. But to my knowledge, the White House has not yet made any official stance on it, and I guess they're waiting to see. I don't know for sure, but I'm suspecting that they're just waiting to see how much traction this has in both the number of original co-sponsors, which I'm sure they've monitored, as well as the number of co-sponsors that signs on at this stage.
We have another call coming in, but I have a bit of a follow-up question. I'm going to ask the caller to hold just 1 second. How do citizens give input to the White House? Can they? Can the citizens, you know, contact the White House and say, hey, we want this, or hey, this is a crummy bill and we don't want you to move on it?
Well, I'm going to give you the email address of the Associate Director for Domestic Policy who took my place there, who's my successor. His name is Daniel M. Gade, G-A-D-E. And his email address is dgade@who.eop.gov. And his direct number is 202-456-7330, which actually I'm sentimentally attached to because that was my old number. So he's actually sitting at my old desk.
All right, let's bring our next caller in. Hi there, you're with Marlena and Ole Kantos. Who's this?
Well, I think that would be me.
Well, it's my friend Roger.
Hi, Roger.
Hey, Ole. I think I talked to you when you were doing the National Mentoring Day at the AAPD.
What a small world.
I have an issue here that wanted to mention to you, and Marlena, you'll be seeing this because I just put it up on the, sent it out to the other members of the Information Access Committee of ACB, which Marlena and I both serve on. Got a correspondence from a lady who teaches down there in Virginia at Radford University. Her name is Suzanne Ament. And she was telling me that she just took a trip to Israel on a 777, Boeing 777, and that they have touch screens now. And not only can she not independently select entertainment and so forth, but she cannot independently call the flight attendant. It seems as though that's a safety concern, and I don't know whether the Air Carrier Access Act applies or what, but I think it's certainly a matter that somebody needs to be looking into.
And you know, I think there's another wrinkle in this too. I wonder on which airline she flew. Do you know?
I believe she said it was Delta.
Okay, because what I do know about this is that each airline puts its specs into Boeing and says, we want it designed like this, including the interior. And so I don't know the answer to the Air Carrier Access Act question, but I wonder, and fortunately this is a U.S.-based airline, and so I think that's a good thing, but I wonder what would happen if it was, you know, an Israeli airline or a European airline, and how we would get around that.
Well, we've got a ruling that says that the cruise lines that do business in the United States have to obey.
Right.
I would think airlines would too.
What's your take on that, Ole?
Well, I'm actually trying to look up some information now, but I think that the Air Carrier Access Act would apply, but the thing that I don't know off the top of my head is the extent to which it would address technology, which I don't think it does. I have to actually review the language of.
You know, the only thing they offered her was to have another passenger help her, and that's really
how demeaning. Ugh, gosh.
The other passengers, a lot of them didn't speak English, and some of them were asleep, and you know, you can't depend on the other passengers to get you the flight attendant.
You may very well have actually stumbled, Roger, on a new legislative issue that might actually require a legislative fix.
Goody.
But I'm trying to find information here, and between now and later, if I'm lucky and I find it fast enough, I will see if I can find information about a central number to call with these transportation concerns.
Good. Well, Suzanne wanted to know what she should do about it. She's not real happy.
Well, I think that the next step would be to get in touch with the U.S. Department of Transportation. And the head of the Civil Rights Office for the Department of Transportation, he can direct it to where it should go. His name is Michael Winter. His email address is michael.winter, W-I-N-T-E-R, @dot.gov. And so he can then.
I thought he was in FTA, but he's.
He is, but he can then direct it. He is at FTA. You're right, but he can then direct it to the appropriate folks.
He's an old friend of mine out in Berkeley.
Mine
Center
too.
For Independent Living in Berkeley.
Oh, when he was executive director out there?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I knew him when he came to Washington back in the 80s. So. Yeah.
Well, Michael's a really good guy. He's obviously, he's also a friend of former Secretary Mineta. He really is a very, very hard worker. Matter of fact, on a Saturday, he met with various folks yesterday at a youth transportation summit, which is really exciting. That's where I last saw him, and he's doing really well.
Well, Roger, I think I'm going to let you go because I've been unfair and kept you on longer. But let me just say this. Let's make sure and help me to remember when I prepare the agenda that this item gets on our first committee meeting agenda, which now that the list is getting straightened out, I actually know who's on my committee.
How about that?
And let's really look at this and see what steps we want to recommend to the ACB board to take, and let's see if we can make this an issue that our committee bites into and moves forward with. And Ole, you bet, as the chair of that committee, I'll be back in touch with you.
Looking forward to it.
All right, Mr. Roger.
Okay, thank you, dear.
All right, Mr. Peterson, you take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. You know, sometimes, Ole, it's just so darn complicated, isn't it? It's just, where do you start? How do you, all you know in this instance is you're a passenger on the airplane and you can't get the help you need, or you don't have the same access as everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you know, it's just so complicated.
That's why it's important for folks to be involved in a consumer organization of their choice.
Yes.
Because there really is strength in numbers and power of collective action. I mean, that's, granted, not everybody's involved in any of the organizations, but it's a good idea to be involved if the goal is to sort of maximize personal effectiveness, because then there's the opportunity to share information and ideas and to pull resources together and so forth. And that's something that can't really be done alone.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we have another call. Let's bring him on in.
Wow,
hi there.
What a great segue.
Oh, what a great segue. There's my friend Dr. Bishop, who's not really Dr. Bishop, but that's my nickname for him. How you doing, Dr. Bishop?
Oh, I'm doing great, Marlena.
All right. What's up?
And actually, my question has to do with consumer organizations. And this is just more of a, and please understand that I'm not asking this as a jab or anything like that. It's just more of an interesting situation that I think would be interesting for you to answer, and that is, with your position, can you be a member of a consumer organization? Because it could be considered that would be, there would be some bias toward a specific segment of a disability population.
And actually, as far as I know, we can, and I am. I'm a member of the National Federation of the Blind, but at the same time, as folks who are in the council will remember and will point out to those of you who know them, I actually don't have any biases against any particular organization, because my role is to serve the entire disability community, and that's why I work at a cross disability level beyond just different organizations within the blindness system. I work at a cross disability level to look for commonality, and it's actually interesting because Marlena and I actually talked about this earlier, where my personal approach has been to look at the areas of need and see how it can be of help to, how I can be of help to that particular effort, and then move forward, because these issues go beyond just organizations. It's just, they're issues of concern to blind and visually impaired folks, period. I mean, regardless of whether or not people are involved in different organizations, there are people who have never been involved in either the American Council of the Blind or the National Federation of the Blind who benefit from the work that has been done by these groups. So, that having been said, I also make no bones about my being a member of the Federation, but I'm not from the school that says, oh, well, you're part of the council, et cetera, you know, because that's never been my approach. I actually work very well with the leaders of both, including Melanie Brunson, who's executive director. I knew her before she was executive director. We go to lunch every so often, and it's great because we also exchange information and ideas of how to work together within my Justice Department capacity.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right,
you're
Dr.
Welcome.
Bishop. You take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-7926. Yes, ACB's own Pat Beatty made a post on one of the lists that I'm on when I publicized the show, and her opinion was that she was very pleased that Ole was joining us on ACB Radio, and that she felt that Ole was a very good, that he truly has the best for blind people in mind in his professional capacity. So that's pretty high praise there, Mr. Cantos, coming from Pat Beatty, who is certainly, nobody knows Washington like she knows Washington.
Well,
so
Pat is amazing. I met her, the first time I met her was at a farewell function for a mutual friend of ours, and from the very first moment, I was just smitten. I thought, gosh, you know, this woman is just amazing with her knowledge and her skill set and everything, and we have been friends for the past 5 years, and I just love Pat, and she's just wonderful. I cannot sing her praises enough.
Well, she sings yours as well. I think we're going to try to wind down here a little bit. You've certainly been, we will keep the lines open for just a bit longer. If folks want to call, this is a good time to call, 866-666-7926. And Ole, you have certainly been a wonderful guest, and Think on Your Feet is the name of the game. And, you know, when you do these shows live, you never know what questions will come, and I appreciate your candor with the answers that you gave. I'd like to talk a little bit before we leave about the Freedom Initiative.
Sure. The new Freedom Initiative that you're referring to is actually the name of the President's Disability Agenda. He actually launched his new Freedom Initiative in February of 2001, within 3 weeks of coming into office. And just recently, on the 26th of July, which is the 17th anniversary of the signing of the ADA, the President released his new Freedom Initiative report for 2007, which is the first one to come out since 2004, and it is by far the most comprehensive new Freedom Initiative document that has ever been put out by this administration. And there are four basic areas of the new Freedom Initiative, and they cover access to information and assistive technology, employment, education, and community living. So those are the four areas, and in order to make sure to be very specific about what people might want to know, I'm happy to talk about any of the four areas, because I know it pretty much backward and forward. And because of the limited time left, I'll leave it to you to ask any questions that you might happen to have about the NFI.
All right, let me bring this last caller on, and then we will kind of conclude with the NFI. How's that?
Sure.
Hi there, you're with Marlena and Ole Cantos. Who's this?
Hi, Marlena. This is Chris Westbrook. I just thought I'd ask a question real quick, because I know you're getting short on time. I've been doing some job interviewing. Well, not lately, but I had done some job interviewing in the past before I got the current job I have now. And I noticed that I would bring up the blindness in the interview to try to put employers at ease. And I think employers have a really hard time figuring out what they can and cannot ask, even when you bring up the subject of the blindness. And I want people to ask about it, and, you know, not, I mean, I figure if they're going to discriminate against me, they're going to discriminate against me whether I bring it up or not. So, you know, but every time I try to bring it up, I get this, like, 10-second silence, and then the interview continues. I'm wondering if, you know, if you think that is an issue, and how do we address that, and how do we make people really feel comfortable with it, and there's not this huge minefield, like the big elephant in the room, you know what I mean?
All right.
Right. Exactly. I actually personally believe that in order for us to get rid of the stigma surrounding blindness or visual impairment, we need to be the ones to proactively bring this up. And the tone that we need to have, this is actually what I've done during all these different times, stages of my career life, not that it's been that long, but what I actually have essentially done through each part of anything I've done is just to be real upfront and to have this real go-getter approach, like essentially to say, yeah, I'm blind, and let me explain to you, in case you're wondering, let me explain to you how I get my work done. And in case you're wondering about how it is that I need to go somewhere or how do I get along, I'm going to explain that to you too, just in case you might happen to have these issues. Some folks who, especially those who are visually impaired, may think that it may not be a good idea to reveal, but to me, if they don't, then it actually can pose some problems at some point. Well, first of all, even at a philosophical level, it's part of acceptance where we have to understand that we are who we are and that the blindness, visual impairment, whichever, is just a part of who we are anyway. And in the same way that we'd address any other characteristic that we've got, we should also address blindness. And then some folks might have said, well, gosh, you know, what if you can sort of sneak your way in and then later say, oh, by the way, I have a visual impairment and I need these accommodations. First of all, to arm people with accommodations related answers to questions, they can go to jan.wvu.edu. That's the Job Accommodation Network, which is sponsored by the U.S. Department of Labor's Office of Disability Employment Policy that actually addresses job accommodations. And the other thing, too, is the Institute for Educational Leadership has actually put out a piece on when to disclose, and if I remember correctly. And that's at www.iel.org. It's under the publication section. And so essentially the thing that I always love to assert is that we shouldn't walk around like we're closeting ourselves and saying, oh, gosh, what if anybody finds out? And we shouldn't be apologetic for being blind or visually impaired. It's just part of who we are. See, the only thing that we can't do is see. That's it. But having said that, that doesn't mean that we can't do other things. So we might not be able to see, but we sure as heck can work in gainful employment, and we sure as heck can work in science and mathematics and being teachers and lawyers and doctors and anything else. And so that's as far as it goes. And when we have that kind of approach, as opposed to thinking, oh my gosh, what if anybody finds out that I have trouble seeing, what's going to happen? You know, we actually end up conducting ourselves in a different way. And I've done it both ways. For the first 20 years of my life, I actually didn't use a cane. It was only after, when I started using a cane when I was 20 years old, that I actually came to accept it. And not only that, but I embraced who I am, who I was and who I am now. And it really opened a whole new way of thinking in my life.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more, Ole. When I worked as a special assistant for the county manager of Arlington County for 11 years, give or take, I would be face-to-face with citizens every day, and they would come in off the streets, and they had issues, and they had this, that, and the next thing. And when I first took the job, I was very nervous about it. I thought, oh, gosh, you know, they're going to see a blind person, and immediately they're not going to have confidence in me. And I went through this horrible just being uptight for about the first, I don't know, maybe month or so. And then I stopped and I said, you know, you're the one that's being uptight about who you are, and you just need to accept who you are, put it on the table, and it's just a part of, you know, it's just a part of what you are. You're blind, you have brown hair, you got brown eyes, you're blind, and once I got to that point within myself, when I did have the occasional citizen who said, I don't want to talk to you, you can't see my pictures, and, you know, and I would just work with them, and I would say, no, you know, I can't see them, so it gives you a perfect opportunity to describe them from your vantage point.
Exactly.
You know? And so
exactly.
You turn it around, and you give it back to them, and you just say, okay, you know, yeah, hey, but we can figure this out, so.
And it's important. I really appreciate you bringing that up too, Marlena, because when we look at what we even say, it's our language. Blind is, it's okay to say blind. Blind's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We don't have to say optically precluded, hard of seeing, visually challenged. Oh, gosh. There's a whole number of different
sightless.
Things. I mean,
sightless.
Oh, that's my favorite one.
Yes, yes.
And so, I mean, there's no need for that. Why should we apologize for a part of who we are? It's just part of who we are. No big deal.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, for those who may have lost their sight later in life, then, you know, they might say, well, gosh, it gets to be pretty hard because I used to be able to see, and it's really tough being what I am now. But the fact is, though, that when we decide to live our lives to the best degree possible, then, and when we make sure to couch what we say by character, by deciding to describe what we have rather than to sugarcoat, then it's so much easier. Instead of using those strange words, just say, yeah, I'm blind or I'm visually impaired or whatever it is that people decide to use, and say, well, you know, but that's just not only just a part of me, but the other thing to understand is that I have a lot of abilities too.
Sure.
But having a disability is not synonymous with not being able to do things.
Absolutely.
I used to think that, and that's why I used to not carry a cane and use a cane. Because I used to think, oh, why should I carry a cane? I'm not one of those blind people.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
There'd be this hierarchy that I wouldn't say out loud, but I thought all the time, where the more you see, the more you're able to do. And the thing that I get these days is, well, Ole, you get along so well. Can you see a little bit?
I get that.
It's like,
too.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Why is it that the ability to be mobile is somehow synonymous with what level of vision you have? And I'd say, fine, put me under sleep shade. Doesn't matter to me.
Or the other thing people say is, well, even Marlena can understand that. And I'm like,
Why even? Why even?
Why even? I don't know. Maybe they're thinking more of my intellect than my blindness. All right, let's go out of here with the NFI, and I'm particularly interested, so I'll take the personal privilege of being the host of the show, in the technology.
Yes, there's been a number of things here. The Department of Commerce actually, for the first time in history, actually put into place different standards for voting equipment, because before, different voting companies would say, we're accessible, so you could buy from us, and so forth. But now, because of the Department of Commerce having put something together through NIST, National Institute on Standards and Technology, that has actually been a very, very historic thing. The other thing is that there have been a number of developments in assistive technology, which includes screen magnification, speech, etc. And that the New Freedom Initiative report actually has information about those developments and helping companies to develop new technology and bring it to market. And that's also been something that's been important. And the Department of Education has actually worked on getting technology into the hands of folks through implementing in 56 different places, states and territories, assistive technology loan program, as well as pushing now for technology recycling, so that way more technology can reach hands of folks, so that way there isn't as much of a digital divide. And Section 508 we also talked about earlier.
All right, and what about employment?
Employment, the big thing with an employment that all of you, it's really interesting that we talked about earlier about disclosure. In the federal government, it is to your advantage, for those of you who are blind and visually impaired out there, it is to the advantage of people with disabilities to self-identify. There's a thing called Schedule A Hiring Authority, which enables people with disabilities to be brought into the federal government non-competitively. And when I first came to the White House, the way the rules were that you'd have to be a client of Vocational Rehabilitation or the Veterans Administration to qualify for a Schedule A hiring letter or Schedule A letter that would allow you to take advantage of non-competitive hiring. But now the rules have been expanded, so now you don't have to be a voc rehab client anymore. You can also be a recipient of federal disability benefits like SSI, SSDI, and so forth, and that government agency, in that example, the Social Security Administration, can issue a Schedule A letter. The other entity is an entity that provides private vocational rehabilitation services in the same way that public vocational rehabilitation services are provided. They can issue a Schedule A letter also. So if you want more information about that, you can go to www.opm.gov/disability. And I've actually put together a comprehensive employment article that talks about not only the federal hiring practice, but also how you look up other resources, even if you're not working in the federal or looking to work in the federal government. So, Marlena, if I can get that to you, you're welcome to distribute that to folks as you see fit.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anything that you would like me to distribute, I will put it out on the ACB Radio Friends list, on the ACBL list, and ask folks to also distribute it as well.
Perfect.
Well, I thank you so much for giving us this much of your Sunday evening. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would like people to know, either about you, your philosophy, just anything in general.
Well, first of all, I really want to extend to you my very deepest appreciation personally to you for inviting me to participate on this show as a guest. I'm very, very, very grateful because I always look for new opportunities to reach out to new friends. And I really do mean friends, not in just the kumbaya sense. But there are folks out there who I really, really want to get to know. And I travel the country on a regular basis. And whenever I travel to any state, I always try to send out a note. Actually, when the schedule isn't as super tight, I send out a note saying, hey, I'm in town, can we get together? So what I do is I stay in touch with folks on a regular basis in the field by email, but then when I travel to those places, I also try to meet with them too. So I always like to find new and creative ways to collaborate and then to bring people together with others in my network. So with the email address I gave you, feel free to give that to folks and have people send me an email called, and in the subject line, call it Leadership List Edition, and then include your name, leadership title, organization, etc., address, phone number, fax number, website, etc., so I can have it. And so I'll include you on this list. And then as we get to know one another and as we correspond on a two-way basis, then there will be new and specific opportunities for us to work together, not only on the issues that we've talked about during this time that we've had together, but also on other things that didn't come up today. So I'm really grateful to you for the opportunity to get to talk with your audience. And I really would like to extend a hand of fun and friendship to folks out there who are your listeners and those who may listen to this following the live broadcast, where I really want to find ways to be of direct assistance and support to all of you in different areas. And if I don't know the answer to something, I probably will know who does have the answer, or I can send you the right direction and so forth, but I am really into results. And I also have a very, very deep love and respect for our friends in the disability rights movement, including all of us. And we are all part of the disability rights movement because every single day that we work to change our own lives for the better, and when we help others to do the same, we continue to build this momentum that will never, never, ever, ever be stopped. And we are all a part of it together, and that's the reality, and that's what I've seen. And it's also the fact that we have an opportunity every day truly to move forward in a way that is not only positive and progressive, but in a way that's life-changing.
Well, Ole Kantos, I appreciate your time. Let me just say your email again is Ole, O-L-L-I-E, dot Kantos, C-A-N-T-O-S, at usdoj.gov. Thank you so much, Ole, and you have a wonderful Sunday evening, and go home.
Eventually. Thank you, everyone.
All right, Ole. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We will be back in just a moment with former President Chris Gray, who is going to make an announcement.
Just filling time, wrapping a tune round a wasting time rhyme. They asked for a song that was 1 minute long, but try as you may, what can you say? As the seconds run past, 4 seconds don't stroll, you fill up this space and you plug up that hole. You're wasting your time now, you're halfway there, but time's running out, and what do they care? There's nothing to say, not a why, but a when. There isn't even the time to sing it again. Have milling made it for hours of toil? Perhaps they could use it for jamming a soft boiled man with a watch, with his thumb on the top, crossing his throat and telling me.
Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page at www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. You're listening to Marlena at the mainstream of acbradio.org and WTNDLP Macomb 106.3 FM. Oh, right. That was a fascinating hour and a half we had, and I appreciate everyone's tolerance with the one question rule. We did bend it a couple of times, but for the most part, I do appreciate everyone's tolerance. And now we will bring a familiar voice back on here to the Marlena program. Good evening, Chris Gray in San Francisco. How are you?
Good evening, Marlena in Seattle. I'm fine, thanks.
How's your partner, Marlena?
Oh, I messed that up bad.
You really
she
did.
In here.
You really did. She
but,
and
know,
I, of course, you
between the two of you guys, this always is happening. It's so funny.
You know, I'll tell her.
Yeah, I do. or she'll listen later on to this.
There you go. There you go. Well, I've been hyping that you have an announcement to make. That's all I've said.
Okay. Well, I do. I have an announcement to make. If anyone listening to your show can be at my house in a half hour, we are cooking pizzas on a 550-degree pizza stone, and you're all welcome.
Oh, man, that's not your announcement, but I'll be right there. Forget the show. I'm out of here.
We opened the first bottle of wine at 5:30.
And that's why you called me Marvelena.
And things are going great. No, the real announcement. In probably February, March, April of this year, I began to think, there ought to be, in fact, there might even be life after the ACB presidency, and yet I wanted to be involved in those parts of ACB that I care the most about. One of those things is ACB radio, and I think most listeners know that, and certainly the board knows that, and members of ACB in the know are aware of that. So I started dabbling in things like SoundForge, and as you know, Marlena, I bought a mixer and began experimenting, and I've been, for my business, doing a lot of work with Linux as well, so I was working on sound cards for that and so forth. Anyway, all this began growing and building in my mind and conversations with others. And the announcement is that on Wednesday of this week at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, and is it 12 a.m.? Thank you. 1 a.m. UTC.
Yeah.
1 a.m. UTC. The premiere broadcast of The Blind Vine from beautiful downtown San Francisco in the James Flood Historic Pre-Earthquake Building, one of the few in our city, will be launched.
Yeah.
And our goal is to talk about things related to ACB, talk about things related to what our members are concerned about, and to exercise our best information and gather information on the show about The Blind Vine, which has got to be the most extensive, twisting, tall, and wide plant ever invented in the world.
Ever, yes. Now, will this program be 1 hour?
It's going to begin as a one-hour show. And to be honest, the idea of going for 2 hours is where I want to go in the future. But I thought at the beginning, with few people knowing about the show and not knowing if this show is really what listeners want, and knowing that it can be difficult to really be on target and totally existing for 2 hours with interest from everybody is hard. I'm going to do 1 hour for the first month or month and a half, and then go to 2 hours from there.
Now, let me just make actually, I caught this when you said it, and then we got involved in the UTC, and I slipped
right.
it away.
Okay.
You're actually starting at 6 Pacific.
No.
Until daylight saving.
No, 5 Pacific.
Oh, are we moving you back to 5?
Yeah, you're moving me back to 5.
Okay.
Because
okay.
long term, we want to move everyone
right,
back
right,
to 5.
Right. That's right. Okay.
Right.
Okay. All right. Oh, glad we got that straightened out. So 5 Pacific, that's right, because we're just inserting you before.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. We've had so much discussion about this back and forth.
Oh, it's been great.
Oh, I know.
So, for example, this Wednesday, I'm going to tell listeners about the upcoming meeting of the National Education Legal Defense Services. I'm going to talk about the agenda a little bit and explain to them what the organization is. I'm going to talk about the upcoming ACB board meeting and chat about that a little bit and what the agenda is and, you know, try to reach out from the leadership of ACB and reach out to people and say, you know, here's what we're thinking, here's what we're doing. But in addition to that, I'm going to talk about San Francisco, the greatest city in the world to live in.
Oh, how cool.
Well, except Seattle, of course.
Well, of course, yes, of course.
And I have a little treat, Marlena, this Wednesday. When I was maybe 7, 8 years old, my parents gave me a small 6-transistor Admiral radio, and I could get KGO in San Francisco on that radio, and I heard this really weird program from two people named Coyle and Sharp. It was called On the Loose, and believe me, these guys were on the loose in a big way. I've got probably 30 of those programs recorded.
Wow. Oh, my.
And every week or two, I'm going to play one of the On the Loose programs, which probably is what made me decide at 7 or 8 years old that someday in my life I would live in San Francisco. But I'm going to do a lot of other things, too. Talking APSs. I know a lot of people out there have never heard a talking APS. I'm going to demonstrate them how they work and try and describe how meaningful they are to blind people who have them. I'm going to do a segment on transportation in San Francisco. For example, you know, we've got trolleys, we've got streetcars, we have cable cars, we have jitneys, we have buses. Every now and then we even have a taxi cab you can get into. And I think people would be interested in hearing about those and how they work. I'm going to go into the BART and demonstrate the talking fare machines in the BART and the Caltrain in the airport and try and let people have a sense of this wonderful city. My offices are at the corner of Powell and Market in San Francisco. It is the busiest intersection on the West Coast of the United States. And let's share something about this city and maybe invite others to share about their cities. And heck, I'd be delighted, for example, to have someone give me a tape of some kind about St. Louis, New York, Washington, Atlanta, Seattle, you know, anywhere, and we could talk about cities of our country and what they mean to us personally. So those are quick ideas, but that's my idea for the Blind Vine, and we'll see how it goes.
Well, it sounds very exciting, and again, you will be beginning at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, mm-hmm. and not 6. And yeah, because I, you know, now of course I remember that whole discussion, and I said to you, are you going to want to start it at 4 when we move back an hour? So
right.
Yeah. So Chris was right. I was not. So 5.
Well,
Pacific.
And isn't that kind of a movement of the radio to move our
yeah.
talk shows back?
Yeah,
an hour?
We're really seriously looking at that because, you know, this 6 to 8 gig on a Sunday night for me is, you know, it's like, wow, okay, it's too early to eat dinner, and it's by the time you get off, it's 8 o'clock, and then you eat dinner and go to bed. So, yeah, it's we're definitely looking at that, and particularly the talk shows that start the day. So, and then Jeff Bishop has Main Menu people on. Sometimes he has guests on at what, I don't know, 10 o'clock at night, you know, on a weeknight. So, So yeah, we're definitely in that direction, and I support it wholeheartedly.
Yeah, it is. The difficulty, of course, is that the West Coast people, you know, are at 4 p.m. But I was thinking about that, and you can say that, and it's a problem. But our friends in Hawaii are at 1 p.m.
Yeah,
and Alaska is 3 p.m. So maybe what we can do sometimes, I don't know, we'll think it over, kick it around, but maybe we can do a weekend show at such a totally different time.
Sure.
That people can call in from those parts of the country and other parts of the world as well.
Sure. Yeah, that'd be great. Well, welcome aboard. You will be an official ACB radio broadcaster.
I'm excited.
And
a little bit scared, too.
But you'll be fine. Hey, I push all the wrong buttons and just laugh.
You know, these Mackie mixers have got more buttons on them than
I know they do.
Can believe.
If people could see the setup, they would just be amazed. But,
well, and I've got to tell you, Marlena, and listeners, Gary the board guy, he knows boards.
He does.
He has taught me more about a Mackie mixer than I ever imagined I would learn. And I've got more to learn as it goes.
Yeah, that's why I gave him that nickname, Gary the board guy. Just don't ask him how he spells board.
Okay, there you go.
Well,
and I've got a request.
Yes, sir.
If anyone out there is a Linux user, I want to know a recommendation for a USB outboard sound card that runs on Linux and works well with ALSA and Orca.
Okay.
How's that for a tall order?
ALSA and Orca. They sound like two twin sisters out of the...
So ALSA is the brother and Orca is the sister.
Oh.
No, Orca is the premier screen reader kind of promoted by Sun, but others,
uh-huh.
for Linux. And ALSA is this advanced Linux sound something or other.
Ah.
I forget what.
Okay.
It's a different world than Windows, I'll tell you.
I tell you, yeah. Yeah. Well, ALSA and Orca,
mm-hmm.
if anyone knows of a good Linux sound card.
USB.
USB that
preferably.
Will work with ALSA and Orca. How did they get a hold of you?
Chris at BayAreaDigital.us.
Chris at BayAreaDigital.us.
Right.
I'm going to go to sleep tonight thinking about ALSA and Orca.
There you go. I guess I ought to get a radio user ID, shouldn't I?
Yeah. Yeah, like Chris.
Chris at acbradio.org.
Yeah.
No, don't write to that.
No, tonight. Don't write to that yet, but we'll get you one. I'll make sure that I will write to the appropriate person and have that happen.
So, Marlena, are you a Harry Potter fanatic?
Do I have to answer that question?
Yes.
No, I'm not.
Oh,
I know,
so
I know. Beat me, flog me. But I did promise Jeff Bishop that
yeah.
I would start reading the books. I did. I did do that.
I must tell you, I am a total Harry Potter fanatic. And Marvelina goes to bed early in the evening, so I get way ahead of her at night. But she wakes up in the morning fresh and ready to go, and catches up with me during the day.
Oh, no!
Between her work and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
But this last 5 days, it's been like 3, 4 a.m.
Oh, my
well,
gosh.
When the coffee is made and the donuts are out or whatever, do you think I'm sleeping?
Now, are you reading Harry and Braille?
No.
No, you're...
We're really bad.
Yeah.
We got the Jim Dale version read on tape.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I know people love Eric Sandvold and all that.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't care for the Sandvold readings particularly, maybe because I didn't begin with them.
Now, is Jim Dale the guy that makes the voices?
Or he does that... make voices,
yeah. Yes.
But so does Eric Sandvold.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that Jim Dale's voices are better. I think his accent is better. But as I say, I began with him, and there's a lot to that, too, you know?
Well, I started Harry Potter when the first book came out. Someone, shall I say, made sure I had a UK version of it.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I did enjoy it. I really did. And then I got about halfway through it, and I just lost the interest. But I don't know why. I mean, I know I felt sorry for him living in that room under the stairs and that mean aunt and uncle. And oh, dear, I just, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm willing to read them again.
You ought to give it a try. I think the excitement of it, if you got far enough into one or whatever, would be great. But I'll tell you, this last one is a real grand stander.
Well, I'm going to do it. I am looking for the books, and I'm going to do it.
Well, if I can help you out, let me know. We can always loan you one of our older copies.
I will certainly let you know.
Well, and I'm very excited to be starting the Blind Vine on Wednesday. I hope people will call in. If they don't, I can talk for an hour.
Yeah,
trust me, you know I can.
I know you can. You can use my line. This is not a telethon to raise money. I need you to call.
There you go. There you go.
As soon as you call, I stop talking.
Well, and one of the things I've got to get sorted out, and it may not be ready for Wednesday. I know people expect an 800 line to call.
Yeah.
And I don't have one attached. At this time, and something happened over the weekend. My Linux is kind of vaguely working, but vaguely not working, so I can't invite people to call me with VOIP or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it may be that folks have to dial a 415 number to get me on Wednesday, but we'll try and get that rectified. If not Wednesday, by next week.
Well, you know, let me know, because I can always lend you my 800 number for that hour. My toll-free, rather. Toll-free.
Toll-free.
Yeah,
right, I know.
Somebody yelled at me once. They said, it's not an 800 number. You say 866. And I'm like, oh, yeah, right. Toll-free.
Well, you know, we old dogs.
I know.
I still talk about making Xerox copies.
So do I. And I still talk about the return key on a keyboard.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Return, enter,
yeah.
Very confusing these days.
Yeah. All right, well, listen, best of luck to you on the show.
Well, thank you.
And we'll be listening.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
It'll be fun. And it's the kind of thing where you really want people to not only interact, but to say what they like, what they don't like, what they do want to hear, what they don't want to hear. My feeling is that we need to talk more in a certain venue about the blindness movement. ACB is a part of it. NELDS is a part of it. Our local affiliates are a part of it. But if we all become a part of it, then it's going to be something new and exciting, and I hope to be able to create that.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I'll be in touch with you about the toll-free number.
Okay.
And I'll be listening on Wednesday.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, Marlena.
Take care, Chris. You're very welcome.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, we're just about wrapped up tonight. I think some of you might be wondering why the line is busy. We hadn't really intended that Chris would be a guest taking calls. It was more of an announcement and just a little chat, because we weren't quite sure how long we would be going with Ole Kantos. And so Chris very graciously agreed to play by ear when we would call, and we kind of agreed that we would plan not to do phone calls during the time that Chris was on to make his announcement. Let me talk to you about what is coming up on the Marlena program. Next week, I will be Memorex. I will not be here live, but I will go through the archives and attempt to find a show that I think many folks enjoyed, and we will replay that. The following week should be a fun week. You might recall before the convention that we had Brenda Dillon on, and she talked about the ACB auction. And one of the items up for auction was an hour co-hosting or being a host on ACB Radio with Marlena. And you could have your choice of the music show that I do or this show. Well, the winner of that bid was Karen Campbell, who purchased it for her husband, Ray Campbell. So if all goes well, Ray Campbell will be joining us. And Gary, the board guy, is coming in, yes?
I'm just asking, we have a request to know when Chris's programs will be rebroadcast.
Oh, Chris's programs will be rebroadcast every... Oh, gosh, I don't have the schedule in front of me, but about every 4 hours, Chris's programs will be rebroadcast about every 4 hours. So it'll start at 5 Pacific on Wednesday, 8 Eastern, and then about every 4 hours after that. Chris, you'll hear Chris's program again. And back to what I was saying to you is that Ray Campbell, if all goes well, will be joining us to redeem his wife's auction procurement of hosting a show on ACB Radio, and Ray will be the host. All I'll do is push the buttons and help him out if he wants the help or has a question or whatever. And so that will take us up to about mid-August. Now, I have some other things in the works, of course. I would love to be contacted by affiliates. I want to start a new segment on the Marlena program where once a month I will highlight and feature an affiliate and the activities of that affiliate. So please contact me and let me know what your affiliate is up to and what programs you are running. And we'd love to have you as a guest on ACB Radio on the Marlena program to talk about your affiliate, the programs you run, how you retain your membership, the fundraising aspect of your affiliate, anything you would like to share about your American Council of the Blind affiliate. So please contact me at Marlena, that's M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, at acbradio.org. Thank you so much for being with us this week. Thank you for allowing us into your home and for spending 2 hours with us on a Sunday night, Monday morning. I am Marlena. It has been a joy. We'll have a repeat next week of a popular show, and then I'll be back with you live the following week, right here at the Mainstream on ACB Radio.